session number 28529, Reel 1.
David Sloman, Reel 1.
Okay. Yeah, this is David Vincent Sloman. I don't know where the Vincent came from, but there you are. I was born in the 19th of February, 1918, which makes me at this moment 86. Come from a poor family, well, poor when after my father died. I don't remember much before he died, because he died when I was 5 years old. Lived in Walthamstow all my life, a lovely place, when I was young, of course. But my father died when I was five, and my mother had seven children. How she managed, I don't know, but somehow she did. Went to an ordinary elementary school, because she couldn't afford to let me go to through the 11 plus exam, so I had to go to an elementary school, which was a good school. We learnt French and shorthand and all the arts and crafts and things like that. A very good school, and I left when I was 14 and started work at the Home and Colonial, 10 shillings a week. And I left there and got a better job from the co-op as a co-op milk boy. I worked on the co-op milk for about 18 months, and then I transferred into the shop. Well, when I got to about 17, 18, I thought to myself, I'm still pushing a trike around, delivering as an older boy, an errand boy. I approached the foreman and said, when can I get behind the counter, as I had been doing on Saturday afternoons. All no, so you'll be 21 before you get. And I thought no, never. So I left there and went into a furniture factory. And I was there until war broke out.
Would you like to just talk about your family a little bit further? For instance, yes, your father, was he involved in the First World War?
No. Actually, my mother and father never married. See, because he, years later when they went investigated it all, they found that he was married to another woman altogether. And so, of course, she didn't get the widow's pension or anything like this. She had to sit on the parish. And she kept us clean. And I was lucky because she knew a family whose boy went to a year older than me. And I got all these cast downs. And they were well off family. So I was well dressed. I was a veteran boy at school, you know. And I had five sisters and a brother.
Whereabouts were you in the family? Where did you
come? I had four sisters older than myself. So, and my brother was a baby. So, of course, I was a real odd one out. I used to get teased terribly. Oh, I was, you know.
But why?
Well, because it was a female house, wasn't it? And my brother was a baby. He didn't count as a boy. I was a male in a female-oriented. The only one that didn't turn funny, innit? No. My mother, hard woman, mother. I suppose she was very bitter. I'd been left with seven children like that. And he died on the 23rd of March, 1923. 23, he died.
What about your schooling? Did you enjoy your education?
Oh, I loved school. Couldn't keep me out of school. And I was an avid learner, read books. There's an article in there, a bit in there about when I used to sneak into the library.
This is, when you say it's a book that you've written?
This is all my memories, see, from when I was, my earliest memory was about, I don't know, about, tells you about the house I lived in. The first memory was of coming downstairs to find a wooden railway engine. My father was still alive then, so I must have been only about 3 or 4 years old.
Had he made this?
No. I don't think so, because there was no workshop or anything like that. No, I think it was a poor one. And I remember pushing it around there's a little kitchen. We called it the kitchen then, but it was because he had the stove in it, like the range, coal range in it, and my mother used to do the cooking on it, as if we didn't have a gas stove. The 20s were a hard time, you know. We had no wires or or anything like that.
What form of, did you have any open fires to have some sort of warmth?
The range, the kitchen range.
That's where the warmth came from.
The only time the fire was lit in the front room downstairs was if somebody was ill, and because that was my mother's bedroom, the front room downstairs, what we used to call the parlour. And that fire was lit in there. The only time was that was if somebody was ill, and they had to lay in my mother's bed, and they were laying in there, and they're putting thermogen on my chest. I don't know what was wrong with me, but I thought I had a chill or cold or something.
When we'll come back to your book later. Yeah. What did you have hobbies at school?
We had an arts class, and I remember they taught me bookbinding, and that was good. I love that because I've always been good with my hands. I'll show you some of the things I've done out there later.
The
little doll's house furniture I made. This house here, you see, the doors and that, and the kitchen, it's all my work. And all the bathroom, did the bathroom, that porch outside, there was no porch outside when I came, I'd done that and put an extension on it later. The workshop, there was nothing there. All the woodwork stuff in this house I've done, like these windowsills and things like that.
Something of which to be very proud.
Beautiful. I made a lovely house for you. It was just an ordinary council house. And the kitchen was in a terrible. That's the first thing I've ever met. I said, "Oh, your kitchen." I said, "It's terrible." I said, "Can I do something with it?" So I altered it all around, put all the cabinets in, and plumbed the washing machine in.
Interested in art at school.
Yeah.
So
I was no good at drawing and stuff like that, but with the hands, like when we'd done this bookbinding, I'd done this bookbinding course, and when I went on a paper round, I used to buy this sixpence a week dictionary, and later on when I was about 15, 16, I used to have it go up in the bathroom where there was a little washhand stand, and I used to use that as my bench, and I made myself a frame to bookbind in. I bound this 52-week part dictionary, because words and reading I've always been a reader, and I've always got dictionaries and crosswords and that. And I bound this book into two volumes. But when we moved from where we were, my first wife, to when I bought this house, I left it behind, and the old man threw it away with rubbish when I went back to job. I thought he left that bit of rubbish and he threw it away.
What a shame.
I'd have kept that for life, because.
The next thing I
bound was for my first wife, when I was courting her. She was a pianist, and every week I used to buy her the latest sheet music. See? And when she had a big stack of them, I bound them into a nice volume for her. And the after the war, when I went to the pub and worked at the pub, I loaned it to the woman at the pub, because she used to play the piano, and that got left there. I haven't got that one out there. School, I love school. We were taught French and shorthand. And would you believe I was doing 120 words a minute when I left school at 14? I'll show you some of my old school reports later.
You did shorthand, but did you learn typing?
No. I taught myself typing since I've been down here.
Have you ever had to use the shorthand?
No. Never. I remember the basics, PB, JJ and all that sort of thing, and all that sort of thing, about the strokes, but to put it together now, yes, I never had a chance to use it.
It's because you didn't use it.
Same as French. Now, I can read French and get the gist of it, but I can't remember. But you asked me to sing French songs, I'm still singing the French Marseillaise. All the way through. La Patria, that sort of thing. And geography, I've got wonderful reports of geography and history and mathematics and English
And you, what age were you when you left school?
14.
So you could have gone on.
I often wonder what would happen if I'd have gone in at 11 plus. Just when the form came out for me to go to the 11 plus, I was in a class that coached the pupils for the 11 plus. And years later, the headmaster of the school, I was a right little favourite, you know. And the headmaster and he was like a father to me. And I was in the stockroom once, we were sorting all the books out with him in the stockroom. And I was talking to him, he says, "You should have been in a minor school," which was the highest grammar school in Walthamstow. Well, some went there eventually. But I should have been after. I wonder what would have happened if I'd have been in a family where they could have sold for the 70 university and things like that. Because, you know, say so myself, I was intelligent lad and learnt, and things stuck there.
And had that curiosity and that willingness to learn.
Oh, yes, Taz, it's lasted all through my life. Oh, yes, I'm always learning.
What about sport during your childhood? Did you?
Sport was not a thing they encouraged at school in those days. Well, one thing, the boys couldn't afford football boots and things like that. I was good at cricket. I was a good bowler.
Where did you play cricket?
In the schoolyard. And they taught us, the masters there, they didn't teach us football. They were all university men, so rugby was. And we used to play what they call rugby touch. It wasn't tackling, if you touched the man, he had to get two strides, you had to get rid of the ball. Yeah. And cricket, they taught you how to hold a bat properly and things like that.
You played in real games, did you?
Only when I was in the army. In the army, I played when we was out in one place in India.
Did you bat and bowl?
I batted, but I wasn't very good at batting. I was pretty good at bowling.
What did you bowl? What sort?
Leg breaks. Breaks, yeah.
Spin bowling. My husband would relate to that.
Spin bowler.
He bowled, yeah. I think he bowled leg breaks as well.
Spin bowlers, good. I was bowling googlies when they'd never even heard of it, you know.
Oh, you could bowl a googly?
Yeah.
Not everyone could do that.
Just carry on. Either go over or round or.
Who taught you to do that?
The masters at school. Hold the ball this way and then put it, and as you turn it over, you know. And once they saw, because I was playing. It didn't have bats. We played kick cricket, and they used to be up against this buttress, which was chalked out as a wicket, and you'd bowl the ball, and they had to kick it. And I was bowling and going round them, and I was missing it, and I was getting them out every time. So.
Did you have any heroes from the England team in those days? Did you know of any of the England players?
No, I didn't know. You knew of them, yeah, but the man when I was a boy was Don Bradman, wasn't it? Yeah. He was before the war, wasn't he? Yeah, Don Bradman and all the old ones, Lynn Hutton. More in my teens, wasn't it? I got more interested in the actual English team, the Australian teams, and Test cricket when I was on the milk round. Like, you used to know, what's the score? You know, England 600 or Australia 600. You know, and used to scores like that in those days. Yeah.
When there's talk of war, did you have a radio in your family? Was there any way within the family that you got to hear about what was happening?
Yes, we did. By that time, we did have a radio. We had it in my teens. Of course, the big thing was the Munich crisis, wasn't it? And just before, no, before that, it was Sudetenland, wasn't it? That was his first move, wasn't it? And we said, "Oh, this bloke's being cheeky." And it was just before Munich, around about then, and I joined the Territorial Army, so. Because my mates and I, we come on. And then, to top it all, the firm said that if you joined the Territorial Army, they wouldn't sack you at 21, see, because our firm, were the job I was at, it was all boys doing the fitting on the furniture. And when you got to 21, because you got a man's wage, they seized you out and put another boy in there, see. But they promised that anybody joined the Territorial Army, that was the clincher. So, of course, we not just joined.
did you join the Territorials? Would you like to just go into that?
Oh, yeah, that was funny, that was, yeah. Are we recording? Yeah. Well, when they said, you know, I decided to join the Territorials, the mate I was working with, the heavy Akak of Walthamstow. And the drill hall was just round the corner where I lived. So, of course, I dashed round there, walked in. Lots of chaps all joining up, you know, lots of them. And we're not going to... No, he's saying, sorry, we're full up here. He said, I can only advise you to go to the nearest one, which was in Leighton, which is a part of Waltham's Forest now. And I went over there, and it was an Army Ordnance Corps. It was part of there was three sections. There was one at Colchester, section at Dagenham, and one section at Leighton, in the Leighton Drill Hall. So I said, oh, what's that mean? He said, well, we want tradesmen, he said. Oh, I said, oh, well, they'll put me down as a carpenter. So he said, no, we've got plenty of carpenters, he says. I said, well, he says, I'll tell you what we can make. You make you a textile refitter. So I said, what's
that?
Had you
heard of that before?
No. He said, what's that? He says, that's all to do with materials and things like that. So, oh, God, who cares, you know. I didn't think I'd ever want it. But, so that's how it became what they called a textile refitter. We finished up as a coach trimmer. Not that I have a good trimmer coach. But that was my trade when I finished up. When it became Remy, we stopped being privates and we were craftsmen. But anyway, I joined there and I enjoyed it, you know. I loved the drill. Yeah, when they used to drill us out the back there.
Would you like to just talk about how it all came to happen, how you arrived there, and your feelings about it all?
I cycled over, everything was on your bike, you know, those days. I used to go everywhere on my bike. Cycled over to Leighton Drill Hall, which was in the next sort of town to Walthamstow, and they mustered me as a textile refitter, as I said, and they'd give us the King's Shilling in those days. Yeah, and yeah, we all stood there and took the oath to fight, you know, to be allegiance to the Queen and
all that.
Or the King, as it was then, yeah. Yeah, I remember that. I remember doing that, yeah. And then, was it once or twice a week? I know we used to go every week, whether it's twice a week, I can't remember now. But then we'd done two or three weekend camps at a place called Friday Hill at Colchester, where all the groups used to meet at the Colchester Vista, and we was in this sort of drill hall place in Colchester. We'd sleep on the floor overnight. It was only an overnight thing. We used to go on the Friday, sleep there Friday night, on Saturday night, and come on Sunday. That was it. And we used to have what they call manoeuvres in Friday Woods.
What did that entail?
Well, I don't know. It's just to me, it was all of them in muddle. But somehow or other, this sergeant, he always made me the blooming runner. And I was running between the different sections, giving messages with no radio. You know, what they call a runner. Because there's blooming 303 over my shoulder, me pack on my back, and that's what you're running about like that. It was quite... it's funny now when I look back on it.
What age were you when you joined the Territorials?
I'd be 20, about 18 anyway, I think it was. And I was 21 when war broke out. And I mean, it was 38, so how would I be? I'd be 19.
But you enjoyed the drill, you said?
Oh, yeah, I loved the arms drill. I was good. I was a real, excuse the word, but the army term was a bullshitter. I loved it, you know. And so much so that when they used to do arms drill, they used to be out the front for the other recruits that happened to copy me, because I got the hang of it right well. And marching and route marching. Route marching. I just love walking. You know, you have to get at the front, you know, and set the pace.
What rank were you?
Just a private. Mm. Never got a promotion. offered promotion once, but I refused it because all they wanted was these lance corporals to take the guard, because there were not enough lance corporals. They'd all gone out and that was out of India, so they'd gone to get a detachment and things like that, you see. But never got the never promotion. Always went in a private and come out a craftsman, which is the same thing.
What about arms training?
With
rifles.
Arms drill, yeah. Mm. And we went on the range a couple of times at Purfleet, I think. It was the guards, Brigade of Guards, it was there. Rifle range at Purfleet, I think it was Purfleet, yeah, near Southend, that way, down that way.
Did you enjoy that?
Oh, yeah, I loved it, didn't I? Well, I love the army, yeah, I love the discipline and the, you know, being ordered about and things like that. The only thing is that when I was called up in 1939, that's when I didn't like it. I'd left my girlfriend and my home at home, I was out. But
she was that your first girlfriend?
Yeah, oh, yes. No, well, not, well, first serious one, yeah, and I married her. So she was lovely, my first wife. And territorial army, yeah, and of course that's happened right until then. On the Friday night on the 1st September, the shop manager come down and he says, David, he says, you've got to report your drill hall. It was mobilisation. That was on September the 1st. But so, of course, dashed home, did I? Oh, panic, rush home, done it. Got my boots clean, they'd gone a bit mouldy from those damp from the last camp under them. Dried them out properly, a bit of mould in them, you know, got my boots. There's another thing, I never minded the army boots, you see. I always wore brogues and did a lot of walking when I was a teenager.
What was the uniform of the territorials?
At that time, the first one was the buttons down the front. What they called a forage cap was a flat cap. And then just before war, we were changed to battle dress. We were issued battle dress. But I kept my uniform, and I was glad I did, because I got married. I'll show you a photograph later on. In the battle dress.
What did the battle dress consist of?
Well, that was a trousers with these rotten brass buttons that kept falling off. And a blouse that buttoned down the front, and then you had a bit come over and buttoned at the side, and it had the pockets, breast pockets, and button sleeves, and button right up to the neck. It was only in later years we were allowed to wear a tie. All the soldiers in those days had the button right up to the neck, and then we used to sew them up. So they were in fact not, they were done up what we call cavalry style. And when we had the battle dress issues, we didn't like that. We thought it was most untidy, didn't we? You know, it didn't look at all like soldiers. No brass buttons to clean, and the only thing we had to clean was our badges, and then they took the brass badges away from us and gave us these bronze ones. I've still got my bronze. The original bronze Ordnance Corps badge, because the Reamy badge was different, and I still wear my original badge that was issued, the Reamy badge, the brass one that was. I still wear that in me British Legion beret. Because we called up on the 1st of September 1939, and I rushed around and cleaned my boots and got my uniform ready and put my small kit in my pack and sort of things, and this bare socks that I had, and dashed to the drill hall and got there, and there was only a few of them there at that time. I was too early. And as a few more coming, they were set to dig in the dirt at the side of the building, filling sandbags. What the labour for, I don't know. Anyway, we had got some rolls and tea, and then they came round, and first night, Sloan, you're on guard. I don't know what we're going to go on. I was on the guard, and I thought, oh dear Lord, that's a good thing. The first night in the army, I'm on guard. Anyway, then the doctor came round, and it was a usual, you know, cough and turn around, bend over, exactly that sort of thing. And then anything else, I said, yeah, I think you'd better look at my feet. And what happened, I'd been on holiday and done a lot of walking, and I intended to scald my feet, tended to scald, and you know, I got blisters and things like that. If I didn't change my socks properly enough. And my feet used to sweat a lot. And just when he took one look at my feet, and they were red raw underneath, he said, "Oh no," he says, "you can't come." He says, "Report Monday morning to my surgery," and he'd give me the address in Leighton High Road. And he says, "You go home," he says, "and come back Monday morning, come and see me in my surgery." Oh dear. So of course I put the kit up. I went to the last corporal or corporal who ever put us on guard, and said, "I can't do it to guard," and they sent me home. So now I said, "My feet are bad." So anyway, I went home, and as it happened, I wasn't living at home at that time. I'd moved out of the lodging through family dispute, and I went back, found the key, and it was I went with girlfriends first, and then I left her for a face, went to where my lodgings were, found the key under the flower pot in the garden, front garden, went in, was crept up, because I knew they'd all be in bed, because the house was in darkness. It was about getting about 11 o'clock, I suppose, and of course those days everybody went to bed early. And the blackout started, of course, that Friday night. And I went up the bedroom, and lo and behold, a couple sleeping in my bed. I put the lights on. I don't know who's more surprised than them. Anyway, they found me the bed for the night, and I stopped there. On the Monday morning, went to the doctor who'd examined me on the Friday night, and he said, "You'll have to report back in a month's time," he said. So he didn't say where I got on. Actually, he said, "It's back to the drill hall." Eh? So he said, "Go and see your doctor. Get him to give you some stuff for that." And at that time, I was with a West Indian doctor, Dr. Telfer, a smashing bloke he was. And he made up this ointment. It was a sort of Vaseline-y stuff, and it smelt like burnt paper. But it certainly cured my feet within a few days. You know, so on the Monday afternoon, I went back to the firm and said, "Look, I've been excused for a month. Do you want me to?" "Oh yes, come on back. We're short of men." So they persuaded everybody, all the men, to join the territorials. Of course, when they was all called up, they. That was short staff, yeah. So because I went back and got on with the overtime and that I was doing, and Saturday mornings, and I managed to save £14 over that month, which was just, in those days, a lot of money. Yeah. When I went back in the army, which is another story, so end of the month anyway. I thought, well, I'd better report back. So I went back to the drill hall. Of course, deserted, nobody there. So the caretaker's name was on the board outside. I went across to him and said, "Do you know where the unit's gone?" "No," he said, "I wouldn't know." He says. So I thought, "Oh, what shall I do?" So I thought, "I'll go to the police." So I went down to the little old Leighton police station, a real old-fashioned little place it was then, and stated my case. I think they must have thought I was a deserter, because they said, "Go and wait in that room till we check up with you." And I was in there 2 hours while I checked up. Anyway, coming and finished, that's right. He said, "We found out all about Jesus. Your unit's at Colchester. If you get there, if you get this so-and-so train," he said, to 2:30 or something like that, "you can, they'll shut the station." Which they did, so I went home, put my uniform on, went down and said big goodbyes to me. And I was estranged from my mother at the time, I went and said goodbye to her. And she only about the second or third time I saw her with tears in her eyes. So her boy was going out to be killed, so. Anyway, I reported back to Colchester, and they took us out to a place called Wivenhoe. And, felt terrible, didn't I? Didn't know anybody. I was put in with a crowd of blokes I didn't know from one of the other sections. And of course, all my mates from Leighton, I didn't know where they were. They were in another part of the camp. And I was in this tent with a load of chaps, and first thing I did was get all my jabs. They'd all had theirs, you see, the TAB jab and the tetanus jab. and that particular weekend, that some of the chaps, they managed to get a week off, the weekend off, like they went home for a weekend, and they left me. I was in this bell tent, an old army bell tent, in the grounds of what is now Wivenhoe House, which is now where the Essex College is, now the University, Essex University is, and Wivenhoe grounds. And I was in this tent all this weekend, all on my own, with feeling terribly ill with these blooming jabs, because felt terrible after these jabs, always made me feel so bad. And anyway, when they came back, trying to sleep on the hard ground, and just a couple of blankets and a palliasse with very, very little straw in it. And most uncomfortable, and felt very depressed and down. And the only highlight of the day was, and they tried to drill us on these fields that were all lumps and bumps. Well, how can